14 minutes past 10 o'clock, you're on the Dave Charles Show on 88FM. It was Freemasons and Heartbreak. Make me a dancer. Well, that'll be a challenge in life. I don't think you're going to succeed if you try. I have my dancing days long gone, but not my guest, Alan Petrie. His story is a fascinating one. We were just recapping and talking about how incredible the story is. A youngster that had so much drive and foresight to become, well, from ops medic in the army to a chance to become a doctor with a bursary from the army that you turned down, studying marketing and at the same time setting up a world acclaimed, the best in the world bungee jumping opportunity that gave you then the legs to go overseas regularly for the action and adventure shows that you were involved with, working with people like Ant and Dec, the two British very famous superstar hosts of all sorts of celebrity game shows, etc., and Kat Deely, who's you've rubbed shoulders with incredible celebrities, and yet you are extremely grounded. You're not a man who wears these stories on his sleeve.
No, I think, you know, we were there to do a job, and I'm a firm believer, if you're going to do anything, you may as well have fun doing it. So we spent a lot of time, like I said, pranking Kat Deely and Anton Deck. If you've ever met them personally, you'll realize that they're also just two fun young lads at the time. I mean, this is a long time ago, so you know, they're not so young anymore, but they were just upstarts at the time, and they're just pranksters, you know. So we had a lot of fun just on this film set and working sort of 6 weeks at a time on this show. And I mean, it was live streaming from Australia to the UK live each night, with like 39 million viewers live. So the stuff you can get away with is insane. So we were just having a huge lot of fun. And
it must be difficult to come back to reality from that, because let's face it, the world of that kind of celebrity television exposure is not reality. It's a almost surreal world.
It is, but you know, remember that at the time I was working in an advertising agency, and even then, you know, we were rubbing shoulders.
So you'd qualified at that stage,
yeah,
and had been given the opportunity to join an agency.
Yeah, I ended up working for a great agency, an agency called Hunt Lascaris, or TBWA Hunt Lascaris, is its full name, and because I was in that sort of world, it was also it was insanely sort of otherworldly in terms of the whole experience of working there, because that was when advertising was very different to what it is now. It's far less corporate then. Now it's very corporate, but back then it was the wild guys. I mean,
how did you get into Hunt Lascaris? I mean, that is probably one of the Rolls Royce.
Great story. Excuse me. Great story. I ended up writing, when I was looking to study, I wrote, in those days you still wrote letters. So I wrote, I think about 18 or 19 different letters to different agencies all around Cape Town, saying, listen, this is what I am, this is what I want to do, what do I study, what do I read, who do I hang out with, what do I learn? And I got all these pieces of advice back. I think I got 12 letters back out of the 19, which is quite good, I think.
Very good.
So out of the 12, I sort of put them in a filing cabinet and left them, and went off to go and study marketing. And at the end of my marketing, I had a practical sort of block where you can apply to go and do a practical somewhere. And I wrote back to these 12 agencies that had written me, and I said, okay, now I've done what you've asked. Now can I have a job? And out of the 12 that wrote back to me, and I wrote back, I think 6 of them wrote back again to say, I can't believe you kept our letter and you've done what we've asked. When can you start?
Wow.
And out of the 6, 5 were prepared to pay me. And the one that wasn't prepared to pay me was TBWA Hunt Lascaris. They were an upstart agency, very, very successful at that stage already. Famous, you know, Reg Lascaris and John Hunt were the gods in advertising at the time. And they said, well, you can come work here, but we're not going to pay you. So I agreed to go and work there. And after 3 months, I said to them, look, either you're going to employ me or you're going to write me a great reference. But one way or another, you're not getting rid of me. And that's what happened. They just kept me. And I worked there for 23 years.
And what was your first function in the agency?
I was in client service. I was what they call an account executive, basically a skivvy. I mean, you start at the very, very bottom. So you're writing briefs and meeting with clients and taking briefs and chasing jobs through the system and what have you. But a wonderful way to be exposed to business and brands. So at the time, we had some of the most amazing brands to work on. I mean, we were working on things like Levi's jeans and Virgin. So, you know, you get to sit in a meeting with Richard Branson. I'm a 21-year-old sitting around a table with Richard Branson. And, you know, the guy's talking to you, hey, Al, you know.
Wow.
What? You know, who gets to do that? So, to me, that whole thing was so surreal. That
now, you get that the impression that's been created by the media, and I want to ask you if it's true. You must have seen the series Mad Men,
yes.
Which is all about the advertising.
Oh, yeah.
Was it as decadent as that?
Absolutely. No. I mean, I could tell you stories I get arrested for. You won't believe the decadence that was going on in those days. I mean, we had people who had, let's call them habits, that were severe working for the agency, but they were genius. They were just that good, you know. And it was a wonderful time to be in advertising because there were no boundaries.
You know, sometimes I wonder about the moral integrity of genius and delivering excellence. I worked with some of the top DJs in the country at Radio 5, one of the top, if not the top at the time. Extraordinarily creative and interesting character. No names, no patrol, because I don't want to give away any personal information that might cause him harm. But certainly he had a cocaine habit that was so dangerously damaging that he was institutionalized twice during the time that I knew him. And both times he came out and he went straight back to his habits because he explained that the habit was costing him X, and it was a large amount of money. But it gave him the ability to earn Y, which was a lot more than that. Without the habit, without the substance, he didn't have the confidence to do much at all. And I wonder about that because he was encouraged. And I say that unashamedly, it was the truth. Mm. He was encouraged, in fact, more than encouraged. He was kind of almost supplied initially.
Yes.
They recognized his potential, but sober, he was not good. So here you go. There's a line before you go there on the porcelain. Go and help yourself. Bang! And he was a mom. And he generated massive revenue turnover. But it kind of damaged him personally.
Yeah. I mean, we had this creative team, a copywriter and an art director, who went off to open their own agency in their own sort of afterwards. And a lot of the people who started the original Huntless Chorus in the V&A waterfront in the Cape Town office, they all went off to go and start their own agencies and what have you. But this particular pair had written into their contract. In fact, their contract is framed. It was written on a napkin at a place called Morton's on the Wharf at the time, which was a local pub just in the V&A waterfront. And their contract stipulates that they will work at the V&A waterfront, at this table, at Morton's, every day from 12 o'clock onwards. And the bill is for the agency's account. And that's what they did. And for the 3 years that they were at the agency, that was their office. In fact, we had their farewell for them by taking that particular table from Morton's, recreating the whole setup in the agency and inviting all the clients and people to have their farewell. But that was their station. And that was what was so fun about the business then, and it was far less corporate. And guys got away with so much more because they were just recognized as creative genius. You know, these guys were so good. They won everything, you know, and the only stipulation was, guys, don't bother me after 12 o'clock. I'm at Morton's. That's where we're working. So we can have meetings in the morning. Unless you come to us at Morton's, we'll sit there at our table and we can think, we're drinking beer and writing stuff. And that was their life. And a wonderful team.
And you were in that world, clearly you survived because a lot of them didn't. Burnout factor is huge on those at that level.
Yes, yeah. We certainly had a wonderful setup, but it was, people don't, it's not an exaggeration to say it's an incredibly fast-paced lifestyle. I mean, you are going flat out 24/7. I mean, we had an agency where, without exaggeration, the agency pub was open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. If you wanted a beer at 9 o'clock in the morning, you could go and get one. No one would frown upon it. So it was that environment, very hedonistic, but unbelievably fun. I mean, I had more fun at work than anyone is supposed to have. We had a great deal of fun. So to come back,
and you earned a good living at the same time.
Look, I don't think I got paid exceptionally well at the time. I think I was living the lifestyle. I mean, we got paid enough to survive. I mean, I don't think that they were throwing money around willy nilly. If you were a great creative, then certainly you'd earn well. But I mean, at my station and where I was a very, very sort of bottom rung person at the time. But eventually, I worked my way up to the organization. Of course, after 23 years, you would. But the fun of being there was so much. It was so much fun to be in that environment that it didn't matter if you worked on a Saturday or a Sunday or until 9, 10 o'clock at night because you were just surrounded by your mates, you know? I mean, this is your life.
Now, it sounds, so it sounds, environment. It sounds peculiarly attractive, but you eventually moved beyond that, and we'll come back and find out how from there you reinvented yourself. It's a story that I'm sure you're going to want to hear. Dead FM, 29 minutes past 10 o'clock, and my special guest, Alan Petrie, a man of many talents, in today unpacking the story. It's been fascinating so far. We're in the world of advertising, and you've made your way through in all sorts of adventures. Now you're a young advertising creative climbing the ladder. Where to from here?
So this is me in Cape Town in the V&A waterfront, and I worked there for 10 years before accepting a transfer to our Durban office because I ended up flying back and forth far too much for everyone's liking. I did 188 flights in 2002, which I think must be, if you've ever flown a lot, you'll know that that's a great number of flights in one year. It's one every 2 days, including weekends and holidays. So I would just fly so much that eventually, after 18 months of it, I agreed with my boss, look, either leave me alone in Cape Town or move me to Durban because I can't live like this anymore. So we agreed I'd move to Durban and relocated up here, settled into a home and worked here for the rest of my career. And I got involved more strategically with the Spa Group, which is one of our biggest customers here. And because of that, more doors opened and I got to meet new different, different people and got involved with different brands. And one of the brands we invented or started for the Spa Group was a brand called Trendy, which was a DIY, attempt at a DIY offering for the Spa Group. And we piloted a store here in Salt Rock that initially was struggling. And because I was part of the team that sort of came up with the concept for the brand and had the strategic kind of nous to understand what is involved with it and how you make money and what have you, I was asked to take a year off advertising, go and be a retailer and fix the store, which I did. So I spent a year in the store doing some retail stuff and really enjoyed that challenge, actually. It's quite a fun thing to do.
And you're very much hands-on when it comes to the DIY world, or in fact, the creative.
Have to be, yeah.
So where did that come from?
You know, I don't know. It's the oddest thing. Because
you never were trained as a woodworker or a machinist?
Not at all. In fact, I took, back in the old days when you had woodworking at school, I gave it up when it was Standard 8 or what's now Grade 10. I was offered the opportunity to continue, and I said, no, thanks. This is not for me. I don't want to do this stuff. And look what I do for a living now. So, we ended up, my passion for woodworking started because I'm nothing if not a cheapskate. When we moved into our first home, my wife and I looked at all the stuff we needed and I said, I'm not paying that. I'm going to make it. So I bought some tools and we fashioned a table. And then we did another thing and another thing. And that's sort of the bug bit there.
Now, interesting you mentioned your wife, mm-hmm. who is very much part of your greenhouse team. She's an award-winning furniture maker.
So
she always?
Lisa, my wife, she's always been into fabric and sewing and very hands-on creative. She's a much more creative person, I think, than I probably am, in the sense that she's a more sort of, she's into design and all that sort of thing. But yeah, so she's an award-winning furniture maker. She started the business in our garage while I was still in advertising. We just had our daughter. And she decided to start the business in our Kloof home, in our garage. And it wasn't long before she was winning awards for her work. She got commissions from people like the Hilton Hotel Group and the Durban City Library and what have you. So, of course, being a qualified female furniture maker and upholsterer gets you noticed. So at the time, she was one of the very few doing it. And I don't know how many are doing it now, but certainly not a great number. And she started the business essentially, and then once it got to the point where she said to me, look, I think you need to kick this advertising thing to the curb and come work with me full time, we took the plunge and opened our store in Salt Rock.
That's a leap of faith that many folk are tempted to make, but few are able to because they just don't believe that it's going to work.
Well, it was nothing short of terrifying, I'm not going to lie. I mean, a stable income is a wonderful thing, and never take it for granted. So for those of you out there who have a stable income and you're unhappy with your life, think twice before you decide to do your own thing. Because doing your own thing, let me tell you, is you are guaranteeing yourself years and years of really hard slog. And nothing is, there's no such thing as an overnight success. I mean, we've been going now as a business for around 10 years. I've only been a full-time manufacturer of furniture now for probably 6 or 7 years. And only now, I mean, after all this, remember, okay, we survived COVID, we've survived floods, we've survived all of these things that you've got to survive in KZN because this is the special province. And, you know, we really have been through the ringer on it. And it's only in the last couple of months, even a year, where we're starting to see, right, okay, this has got potential now. Now we're starting to get momentum and we're starting to become part of the community. And we, you know, we try and get involved wherever we can. And to us, it's very gratifying to slowly start feeling like, okay, we're going to be okay, you know. So that's been a slog.
You are an example of staying the course, which is, I think, probably 9/10 of the recipe for success. Never give up, no matter what it is that you do. If you do, if you believe that you're doing whatever it is that you do better than the rest, and you want to prove it, you know, take a flyer, but never give up, because you're going to definitely be challenged.
I promise you, it's not like we haven't thought about it. I mean, we've had some months there where we thought, what are we doing, man? This is insanely hard. You know, this shouldn't be this difficult, but it is.
I think it's particularly difficult on the North Coast. And the reason I say that is because I've seen so many businesses come and go. Yeah. And there are those that understand the value of getting the word out there. I mean, it's a hell of important. You're an advertising man. You understand exactly what I'm talking about. So many folk believe word of mouth is going to be all right, but word of mouth can also be your worst enemy when it comes to, well, I didn't exactly like that bowl of whatever I had at that restaurant, and I'm going to tell people not to go. It's not a good. But getting back, your greenhouse brand has been around, you say, 10 years now. Mm. And in 10 years, it's established, well established on the North Coast. What do you do?
Well, we are, I suppose, the definition on our website is we are a manufacturer of custom furniture and decor items. We have a retail offering as well. But we are essentially a manufacturer / retailer. I mean, Lisa owns the retail arm of the business. I own the manufacturing part of the business. I'm essentially a supplier to my wife, to Lisa, to the store. And I do, obviously, direct commissions if people approach me directly for whatever reason. But we try and drive it all through the shop, obviously, so as much as possible through the store, because it makes the most amount of sense. So I don't have an admin team. I'm in the workshop making furniture with my team. So ideally, we drive it all through Lisa, who drives the processes. And she's very much a process-driven person, and it's wonderful, because it's massively helpful to me to have somebody who not only understands how to manufacture furniture, but also can go into someone's home and go, you know what, this is what I think you should be doing. And she does that extremely well. So she will do a consult, go to your home, look at your space and go, hey, this is what you need. Why don't we try this? Why don't we try that? And then we send a proposal and some drawings and some costings to a person. And we don't couch ourselves really as interior designers. We know we're not interior designers. That's not what we claim to be. We claim to be furniture manufacturers.
Manufacturers of bespoke,
yes,
one of a kind, which is, I think, very important. Yeah. Each piece that you make is pretty much unique. Yeah. Or it is unique, because you're making it with your team, with your, and it's not a mass production deal. You're not going to, this is not a line that is going to go into the commercial world. You know that you're getting exactly what you're looking for, unusually available, because generally speaking, that kind of bespoke furniture would be beyond the pale, beyond the reach of even the very wealthy. It's a special offer on the North Coast.
Yeah, I mean, we are just, we were lucky enough to get a commission now for Toyota, for the guys who own Tekwini Toyota Group, and they needed a boardroom table in their Westfall premises. Except the table is 4 meters by 1.3 meters, and it's too big to fit through any of the doors or any of the ways to get into the boardroom. So we have to physically build it in the boardroom. So, you know, this four meter by 1.3 meter monster table, we have to do in component form, take it up to Westfall and construct it in their boardroom for them. Now, you know, it's going to be there forever, because they will never be able to get it out the door unless they cut it up. But I mean, that's going to be there for a very, very long time. But that's the kind of work that's, you know, we're capable of doing. So we are, I suppose, good at doing the very bespoke stuff and the very specialized things. But that's the challenge we enjoy, you know.
And where are you based?
Well, look, I've got a workshop in just here in Sharker's Head, in the Imbonini mini factories area. That's where my workshop is. But our store is, in fact, at the Sage Center. So where Lisa is right now, in fact, in the Sage Center, we've got a showroom there, and that's the contact point for people, is to make contact with us, is to go to the store, get a hold of us online, have a look at our Instagram and our Facebook pages and all that. But yeah, so that's the touch point, is the store. And yeah, we've been so blessed this last little while to enter into partnerships with some of the other major brands. I mean, we've got, my goodness, so people like Hertex, you know, which is a very well-known brand. I mean, Lisa's working with them on a project that, if it comes to fruition, is going to be a game changer for people on the North Coast.
Wow.
So we'll reveal more about that later, but we're working on something very special there, where people will be able to streamline their purchasing of all the Hertex products and brands. Brands like Woodbender Chairs, we're in a partnership with them now. I just got involved with a new company called Movo, which is an online, also a retailer of decor and children's furniture and what have you. And that's taking off very, very nicely. It's a wonderful brand to be a part of. We spent a year in development with them, developing, I think, 26 or 27 prototypes just for them. And that brand launched in sort of January, and it's just taken off. So, yeah, we've been fortunately positioned to take advantage of some fantastic, fantastic opportunities.
Well, and you see, opportunity comes along. Yeah. You've taken the initiative. You're positioned now on the growth point of KZN's expansion. The North Coast is, well, listening to the property gurus, this is probably one of the most important, valuable pieces of real estate in the country at the moment in terms of growth and opportunity. And Greenhouse, well, you're positioned ideally. It's a wonderful brand. You've certainly walked the talk. You've got the legacy behind you to proudly claim that what you do is based on a life that has been lived and well lived. The experiences that you've gained in marketing and in all of the ventures that you have tackled. Now is the time, I think, you can put it all into the integrity of the brand and keep delivering what is superb. I'm not often impressed by individuals that create stuff, but I'm very impressed by you.
Oh, thank you.
Because I've seen how you operate, and I understand your passion and your integrity and the struggle that it takes, and that courage to face and overcome the adversity and then to triumph. And everyone says, you see, it's easy. Look at that. Alan's done it. Well, yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, it's also thanks to the folk on the North Coast who've been very, very accommodating and kind to sort of two relative outsiders from, you know, the outer west in Kloof, who sort of moved to Ballito a few years ago and sort of tried to, you know, eke out a living doing something that there's plenty of competition. It's not like we're the only guys doing what we do. There are lots of people who are doing what we do.
But they don't do this well.
We just hope that we're in the top three or four of the people that are doing it. You know,
like
we just
want to be at the top.
We just want to be the best we can be at that. But yeah, so yeah, to the people of the North Coast, thank you for supporting us. And yeah, watch the space. There's some fantastic things coming your way.
And there we leave it for today. My very special guest, Alan Petrie. The brand is Greenhouse. You'll find them in Salt Rock. And if you're fortunate enough to meet Alan and understand what a mensch he is, he's involved in all sorts of community activities, very involved in the local running club now as well, you'll discover that there are people that inspire you and people that uplift you. He's one of the best. Thank you for joining me on the Dave Charles Show.
It's a massive pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We will hopefully continue the conversation down the line.
Thank you.